This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Hurricane Maria takes aim at Puerto Rico. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Gashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Ross Akay on this Tuesday, September 19th. And here's what we have for you this hour.
Hurricane Maria pummeled the small Caribbean island of Dominica as a Category 5 storm as it heads now toward the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico.
President Trump will address the United Nations for the first time today, laying out a foreign policy based on his America First principles.
According to a CNN report, the U.S. government wiretapped former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort under secret court orders.
Tracking your kids? Watch out. They might just be tracking you.
You know, it's kind of a time-honored tradition that parents have tried to keep an eye on their children. And because they now do it through smartphones, their children have realized that they can kind of turn the tables and track and monitor mom and dad right back. They're doing so for a variety of reasons, ranging from wanting to stay out of trouble, say, by cleaning up after a party in time.
That's Anna Maria Andriotis of the Wall Street Journal. She'll be here with that story in about 20 minutes. Hurricane Maria, the second major storm to hit the Caribbean this month, is moving toward the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico after it ripped through the small island nation of Dominica, causing widespread devastation. Downgraded to a Category 4 early today, Richard Pasch of the National Hurricane Center says Maria remains an extremely dangerous hurricane as it churns about 235 miles southeast of St. Croix.
The inner core is fairly compact and small. The tropical storm force winds extend outward up to about 125 miles. So it's not as large as Irma was, but it has time to grow in size over the next several days.
The storm plowed through Dominica, an island nation of 72,000 people in the Eastern Caribbean late yesterday, causing widespread devastation. The country's prime minister called the storm mind-boggling and says his focus is on rescuing trapped people and securing medical assistance for the injured. With maximum sustained winds of 155 miles per hour, Maria slammed into the island as a Category 5 hurricane. In Puerto Rico, Governor Ricardo Rossello says preparations are underway.
This seems to be a very ferocious, intense. It's going to bring a lot of water. It's going to bring strong wind, so we're cautioning people.
While the intensity of the hurricane may fluctuate over the next day or two, Maria is expected to remain a Category 4 or 5 storm. President Trump's first address to the UN General Assembly today will lay out a foreign policy rooted in his view of nationalism and sovereignty and anchored by America First principles. Trump will call for more burden sharing and cooperation among countries on issues including the fight on terrorism, North Korea's nuclear and military threat, and Iran's adherence to a multinational nuclear deal. The president gave a preview of his speech on day one yesterday.
We encourage all member states to look at ways to take bold stands at the United Nations with an eye toward changing business as usual and not being beholden to ways of the past which were not working.
Trump will also mention reforms at the UN and the role countries play in enabling North Korea's regime. Senior White House officials say the address will combine the nationalistic theme of his campaign with an appeal to the nationalism of other countries as a new basis for international cooperation. Trump's speech will be delivered with the use of a teleprompter in an effort to convincingly present a foreign policy doctrine. U.S. investigators reportedly wiretapped former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort under secret court orders before and after the election and continued into early this year, including a period when Manafort was known to talk to President Trump. With more on the story, this morning's Mike Gavin.
According to the CNN report, some of the intelligence collected includes communications that sparked concerns among investigators that Manafort had encouraged the Russians to help with the campaign. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's team, which is leading the investigation into Russia's involvement in the election, has been provided details of these communications. A secret order authorized by the court that handles the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act began after Manafort became the subject of an FBI investigation that began in 2014. It centered on work done by a group of Washington consulting firms for Ukraine's former ruling party. The surveillance was discontinued at some point last year for lack of evidence, but then restarted by a new warrant. Sources say the second warrant was part of the FBI's effort to investigate ties between Trump campaign associates and suspected Russian operatives. Such warrants require the approval of top Justice Department and FBI officials. Jen?
Thanks, Mike. Coming up, inside the Equifax breach.
If you travel for business, stop wasting time pricing your flights and hotels at the same old sites. Visit Upside.com. It's quick and easy for Upside to show you the exact flights you're looking for and the big-name hotels you want. You can buy them separately or bundle them. See, the more you bundle, the more you save, the bigger the gift card you receive to places like Amazon.com. Every time you buy a business travel package using Upside, you'll get the VIP treatment while still paying low prices and being rewarded with gift cards every time you book a package. Oh, you'll keep your airline miles too. Upside's the real deal for buying your business trips. You got to give them a try. And right now, when you use the promo code DEAL, you're guaranteed to get at least a $100 Amazon.com gift card on your package purchase. That's code DEAL to get a $100 gift card free. Upside.com, the better way to buy business travel. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details. Upside.com and the code DEAL.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa K, and we're coming to you live from the Dell studios. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell small business tech advisor. From about mid-May to July 30th, hackers ransacked vast troves of information at credit reporting company Equifax, exposing the personal information of about 143 million people. Much remains unknown about the hack attack and how it burrowed so deeply inside the company. Investigators, security experts, and Equifax itself are focusing on what the company did or didn't do right in the run-up to the massive intrusion. More from Wall Street Journal consumer lending reporter Anna Maria Andriotis. Anna Maria, what did you and your team look at here?
What we aim to do with the story is piece together a timeline of what occurred and when it occurred at Equifax. And the date in which we began is on March 8th. That is when researchers at Cisco had first reported an online security flaw that was allowing hackers to basically break into servers around the internet. And the company urged other companies to upgrade their systems quickly. So what we also know is that around the same time, a U.S. agency, the Computer Emergency Readiness Team, as it's called, which is part of the Department of Homeland Security, also sent out a notice about this vulnerability. And so basically there were warnings, and there were warnings many months ago that companies' computer systems could be were vulnerable to hacking. So that's really the starting point here. Now, what the company has said, what Equifax has said, is that it became aware of, you know, suspicious activity on July 29th. So you see how big of a gap that is there. Though the company did recently say, it put out a press release, put out an announcement on Friday, saying that it did take steps in response to the U.S. Agency alert about this software vulnerability to fix the problem, to patch up the problem. So what we're talking about is a 4 or so month duration of events that began with some serious warnings from entities that had seen that there were breaches that were occurring.
And do you think this has been traced back to some employee portal in Argentina where the username and password was admin?
Well, that is a bit of a separate matter. One of the individuals who we spoke with this story, who works in the identity theft monitoring sector, said that it was recently discovered that it was possible to access an Equifax-operated employee portal in Argentina by basically using this easily guessed username and password combination that you mentioned, admin. So that, you know, again, it just raises questions about when you're a company of the caliber that Equifax is, when in the U.S. alone you have data on north of 200 million people, what occurred here? Why was there a breakdown in the security designed to protect all of that data?
So has anyone said that perhaps Equifax cut corners to save a few bucks, or was there a simple incompetence here?
So what is being said at this point that I feel most comfortable sharing is that Equifax, during the last 10 years or so, was a company that really focused on acquiring as much data as possible on consumers. Now, all of the big three credit reporting firms, whether it's Experian, Equifax, or TransUnion, do that. They're in the business of doing that. But what I'm told is that the difference with Equifax is that it went very heavy on the data collection, and according to some people in the industry, not so heavy on the IT software side of things. And that basically they were, you know, they became this massive gatekeeper to Americans' personal information, essentially the keys to their, you know, financial lives. But that there are some pretty serious questions at the moment about whether the company actually put in the same level of effort as it did in collecting data to protect it.
Thanks, Anna Maria. Meanwhile, word just coming out that Equifax hired cybersecurity experts to deal with an incident on its corporate networks back in March, 2 months before this massive attack. Equifax says the March episode was unrelated to the summer attack. It's 21 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of today's top stories.
Well, Jen, Hurricane Maria lashed the Caribbean island of Dominica overnight as a Category 5 storm with 160-mile-per-hour winds and a storm surge of up to 11 feet. Prime Minister Roosevelt Skerrit posted on Facebook, "We will need help, my friend. We will need help of all kinds." Meteorologist Richard Pasch at the National Hurricane Center in Miami says Maria's on the move as a Cat 4 storm.
We expect it to continue on a west-northwest heading, and that's going to take it just very near some of those northern leeward islands.
Evacuations are underway in Puerto Rico. Governor Ricardo Rosello.
We seem to be facing a deeper, much more challenging hurricane in Maria.
The U.S. territory is expected to meet Maria by midday today. It escaped the worst of the damage from Irma, although it experienced widespread power cuts. And it's been an important hub for getting relief to islands that were more badly affected. Hurricane Jose making his presence known to the Middle Atlantic and New England coastlines today under a tropical storm watch, with winds and rough surf churning up the shores since yesterday. President Trump makes his U.N. General Assembly debut today. He pressed his case on the cost of U.S. support for the international organization Monday while chairing a meeting of more than 100 international leaders.
We must ensure that no one and no member state shoulders a disproportionate share of the burden, and that's militarily or financially.
Trump announced he's talking with Chief of Staff John Kelly about hosting a military parade down Pennsylvania Avenue on the 4th of July after watching France's Bastille Day parade as French President Emmanuel Macron's guest. Two armed and dangerous inmates on the run from the Mississippi State Penitentiary at Parchman. 41-year-old James Sanders serving a life sentence for murder. 22-year-old Ryan Young serving 40 years for burglary and firearms convictions. Both were found missing during a routine count yesterday morning. Michael Flynn's family set up a legal defense fund to help pay for the legal bills racked up by the former White House National Security Advisor, thanks to his central role in the federal government's Russia investigation. Flynn expects his bills could exceed $1 million. A volcano in southern Italy that hasn't erupted since 1538 might be getting ready to blow, according to scientists who have found and studied the source of magma building up under its surface. Campi Flegre is just west of Naples, just a few miles away from Vesuvius, the volcano that famously destroyed Pompeii. 2,000 years ago.
One of the coolest places I've ever been, Pompeii.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Thanks, Rasa. A reminder that we can connect on social media. Friend us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. Parents have always tracked their kids, but perhaps they're tracking you now. This morning's Gordon Deal spoke with Katie Binley of the Wall Street Journal and has more.
We're speaking with Katie Binley, Wall Street Journal mobile editor. She's written a piece entitled Horrors: Millennial Use Tracking Apps to Turn Tables on Mom and Dad. All right, so what have you found here?
Well, I found that, you know, it's kind of a time-honored tradition that parents have tried to keep an eye on their children. And because they now do it through smartphones, their children have realized that they can kind of turn the tables and track and monitor mom and dad right back. And they're doing so for a variety of reasons, ranging from wanting to stay out of trouble, say by cleaning up after a party in time, but they also get worried when mom and dad like don't answer their phones because they're pretty used to you know, constant responsiveness. So when their parents don't answer their texts or their calls, they'll get really worried, and then they'll track them to see where they are and see whether or not there's anything to be concerned about.
That's funny. Give me an example of one of these young adults who turned the tables. What'd you find?
Well, in one instance, a kid, he's 22, his parents went out of town, and he had helped them sort of get their phone set up like 5 years ago. And he downloaded Find My iPhone, which is meant to be used to find a lost iPhone. But what he did is, because he was helping them, you know, quote-unquote helping them, he, you know, took note of their passwords, and then when they went out of town, he was able to log in and track them so that he knew what time he had to have everything cleaned up by and what time all of his friends had to be out of the house.
So I use, I know my wife and I use Life 360. You mentioned Find My iPhone. What else is out there?
Well, yeah, so Find My iPhone is, this was really like a young man kind of like co-opting its purpose because it's really meant to be, you know, for finding your own lost phone.
Yeah.
But Find My Friends, on the other hand, is, you know, is through Apple, and it's meant to be more of like a social sharing location based where you've got, you know, a friend will say, I'm going to share my location with you. Do you want to share it back? And so that one is pretty common for parents to monitor their kids through, and kids will monitor them back through Find My Friends.
This morning's Gordon Deal with Katie Binley of the Wall Street Journal. It's 30 minutes past the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
BarkBox is a great way to try a variety of treats and toys for your dog from local and small businesses that you may not otherwise be able to find. Each monthly box is themed like Country Fair or Brooklyn Hipster and packed with new and unique toys that continue to keep dogs engaged, interested, and happy. Every month, BarkBox Paw Picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match a dog's unique needs, including allergies and heavy chewer preferences. If your dog does not like something in the box, they'll even send you something they'll love for free. Because BarkBox is all about dog happiness. Free shipping on any BarkBox within the continental U.S. My dogs Lola and Daisy are going to love it when the treats and toys show up at the door. It'll keep them happy, and it's convenient for me. For a free extra month of BarkBox, visit BarkBox.com/Gordon when you subscribe to a 6- or 12-month plan. That's BarkBox.com/Gordon to get a free month when you subscribe to a 6- or 12-month plan. Make your dog happy. BarkBox.com/Gordon.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter @ThisMorningShow. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. ThisMorning@CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines on this Tuesday morning. Hurricane Maria barreled into the Eastern Caribbean late Monday as a dangerous Category 5 storm, ripping roofs from homes, knocking out electricity on the island of Dominica. President Trump will take his America First message to the UN today. Just before the all-important holiday season, Toys R Us has filed for bankruptcy protection. Adidas has passed the Jordan brand as the second most popular sneaker in the U.S., and the creepy octopus may be part of an animal gang. That story in about 20 minutes. Cities and universities are evaluating ways to prevent unruly protests without limiting free speech rights. In the wake of the recent violence in Charlottesville and Berkeley, A balancing act likely to tie up lawyers and public dollars for months to come. Sarah Randazzo of the Wall Street Journal is here with the story. Sarah, so this certainly is a tightrope. Explain both sides here.
So I was looking at the ability of cities and public universities to change their policies around kind of speech and protests and rallies in light of the violence in Charlottesville. And it's a tricky question because obviously free speech is a firmly ingrained right for both cities and public universities, but there's ways that they can limit it to make sure violence doesn't erupt. These entities have the ability under the First Amendment to control what's called the time, place, and manner of speech or public assembly, but the key is that they have to be putting those regulations evenly across the spectrum of speech. So, you know, they can't say, oh, if you're, say, a white supremacist, you can only speak before 3 p.m., but everyone else can speak until 6 p.m. You know, the key is that they have to evenly apply the time, place, and manner restrictions. And so as long as they do that, they shouldn't run into too many issues from groups saying that they're restricting the First Amendment.
What happens when you have a group with a history of violence? Can you deny a permit?
Right. That's kind of the real tricky question that people are weighing right now. And the Los Angeles city attorney was talking to me about that and saying, you know, that he is in support of kind of doing a little more scrutiny of, say, looking through the social media pages of these groups applying the permits and seeing, are they, you know, in their permit, are they saying one thing, but on social media, are they saying, hey, everyone, come with sticks and guns and we're going to, you know, be violent toward XYZ entity. So I feel like that's a real obvious example where if you clearly see on social media that these organizers have violent intentions, I think there would be good grounds to deny a permit. But legal experts have said it's pretty tricky finding grounds to deny a permit on the front end unless you truly believe they have an intention to incite violence. And that's really the real gray area that cities are going to grapple with.
Have any new policies been enacted since Charlottesville?
Nothing has been super put in stone yet. I think that cities and universities are kind of experimenting with things, and especially on the university side, they're being pretty careful, and some have said that they're revisiting their policies. I have a feeling that lawyers everywhere are looking at this, and they're getting legal opinions on how far can we go in restricting these policies without crossing a line.
How do officials vet a group if they were looking to hold a rally the same day they apply for a permit?
So that's the tricky element. But I think cities and universities could say, you must give us XYZ days heads up if you want a permit. You know, so I don't think any city is going to be forced to issue a permit within hours or anything like that, as long as their policies state, you must give us this much heads up. But yeah, there's definitely an urgency. And an attorney in the university side said that he's talking to a bunch of other attorneys who work at universities, and he said there's definitely an urgency since Charlottesville to really examine these policies and see what they can do going into the new school year.
What did the chancellor at Cal Berkeley mean when he declared this free speech year?
Yeah, so Berkeley is an interesting one where, you know, they've long been considered a very liberal, open place, and in the last school year they had a few public incidents that gave them bad press involving some conservative speakers that they say they were limiting the events because of violence concerns and some of these time, place, and manner restrictions. But the people who were coming to speak say that they were being basically restricted because of their conservative viewpoints. So the school is now kind of trying to go in the other direction and saying, we are a university that believes in free speech and open ideas. And so they're really doubling down this year to allow all kinds of viewpoints. But in the process, they're going to be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on security, but they've basically said, we're willing to put out the money because we want it known that we are open to free speech.
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Randazzo of the Wall Street Journal. It's 21 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kishinka and Rasa K in for Gordon Deal on this Tuesday. And now we go beyond the headlines. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we know the city of San Diego is understandably bitter about the Chargers skipping town for Los Angeles. The new NFL team of choice in that city just might be whichever team happens to be playing the Chargers that week. At least it will be for fans of free tacos. And who isn't a fan of free tacos? According to USA Today, one San Diego restaurant is giving out free tacos every time the Chargers lose. And with the team sitting at 0-2, the owner may need to rethink the promotion. Though, despite the potential for big losses, the man named Victor Lopez, who runs the restaurant, wants the team to go winless, despite what it may cost him. The lifelong Chargers fan has even devised a secret word for fans to use to cash in on the promotion, Spanos Tacos. The secret words are, of course, in reference to Chargers team chairman Dean Spanos, who orchestrated the move to Los Angeles after trying and failing to get taxpayers to pay for a new stadium in San Diego. The Chargers take on the 2-0 Chiefs on Sunday, so San Diego could be in store for more free tacos this weekend.
Did you just say secret word?
Yes, there's a secret phrase.
That you just announced to the entire nation?
Well, okay, sure. I mean, it's really not that secret. This is, you know, he's putting this out as a promotion. He wants people to come, so it's not so secret, but it is fun, isn't it?
Well, now thousands and thousands of people are going to go to this restaurant to get their free tacos because of you.
Yeah, because of me. Yes. Because of the national newspaper that this was printed in, most likely, but yes, also because of me as well. And perhaps us as well, when it gets right down to it. And, you know, Jen, when you find out your pipes are clogged, there are certainly worse things you could find when unclogging them than cold hard cash. That's not stopping Swiss authorities from investigating reports that someone flushed tens of thousands of euros down the toilets of a bank and several restaurants in Geneva clogging their pipes. According to the Huffington Post, several months ago, toilets near a bank vault in the city were stuffed with 500 euro bills, which had apparently been chopped up with scissors. More bills were discovered clogging nearby restaurants' toilets in the following days. Now, in Switzerland, where the currency is the Swiss franc, it's not a crime to destroy banknotes, according to the BBC. However, European Union prohibits the destruction of large amounts of its currency. So far, it appears curiosity alone has prompted local authorities to launch a criminal investigation.
What would make anyone cut money and throw it down the toilet?
Yeah,
anything.
I am no criminal mastermind, but I can't imagine any scenario by which anybody, criminal or law-abiding citizen, would want to cut up money and stuff it down a toilet.
Unless you were so angry at someone, you wanted to take their money and make it impossible for them to get it back, and you didn't really care if it was yours or not?
Right. Yeah.
What other possible thing could it be?
Somebody else's money, or perhaps you thought the money was hot for some reason. Like, you know, again, it was marked money or counterfeit or something like that. But, I mean, they haven't said it's counterfeit. They think it's real. So I don't know. More answers to be uncovered, I think.
All right. Thanks, Mike. It is 14 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
Jennifer Kishinka and Rasa K in for Gordon Deal. Thanks for joining us this morning. If you're in the job market and you don't have the proper degree or training for a job you're interested in, you might want to go for it anyway. With employers struggling to find workers in an ever-tightening labor market, many are hiring job candidates for both white and blue-collar jobs who lack skills or experience deemed essential just a few years ago. Staffing firm Robert Half says companies can no longer find candidates who fit the job description 100%. So they're going for about 70 to 75%. Individuals who have high potential and are a good cultural fit may fit the bill. To fill in the gaps, more employers are launching training programs. Nearly half of U.S. employers provided such programs last year to deal with talent shortages, up from 12% in 2015. Other companies are picking the candidate who meets most qualifications and then bringing on another worker to handle the rest, effectively splitting the job in two and paying each employee about half the original salary. But while certain basic skills can be taught, job candidates must have soft skills such as the ability to work well with colleagues and deal professionally with customers. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jennifer, Hurricane Maria is a Category 4 storm with Puerto Rico in its sights. The island is under a state of emergency as Maria continues to strengthen on its approach. It roared across Dominica and the adjacent Leewards overnight, already hammered by Irma earlier this month.
The inner core is fairly compact and small. The tropical storm force winds extend outward up to about 125 miles. So it's not as large as Irma was, but it has time to grow in size over the next several days.
Meteorologist Richard Posh at the National Hurricane Center in Miami says that after passing Puerto Rico later today, Maria is expected to graze the Dominican Republic before it moves north towards Turks and Caicos and eventually into the Atlantic Ocean. Hurricane Jose today is producing riptides and gusty winds and threatening beach erosion from Delaware to Maine. As part of a sweeping purge of leadership in the Japan-based Pacific Fleet, the Navy has fired two senior commanders in the region in connection with recent deadly collisions of Navy ships. The top U.S. Navy officer and the Navy secretary are scheduled to go to Capitol Hill today for a hearing on the ship crashes. The Senate passed its version of a $700 billion defense policy bill backing President Trump on a stronger military, but setting up a battle over government spending levels later this year. A quieter night in St. Louis, where demonstrators gathered outside the jail downtown for more than 2 hours to show solidarity with those who remain behind bars after being arrested on Sunday. Three nights of vandalism followed nonviolent protests during the day in the city after a judge acquitted a former police officer Friday in the fatal shooting of a black man in 2011. Seattle has a new mayor. Veteran City Council member Tim Burgess was sworn in last night.
I promise to work every day for the next 71 days as mayor to help heal and move the city forward.
Burgess finishes the rest of the term of former Mayor Ed Murray, who resigned after being dogged by allegations of sexual misconduct. The Global Burden of Diseases, Injuries, and Risk Factors study analyzes disease and mortality rates across the world. Overall, mortality rates have decreased across all age groups and infectious diseases are down, but certain non-infectious diseases and causes of death are on the rise, notably death from heart disease, diabetes, and terrorism. The 2016 report finds death by terrorism rose 143% from 2006, reaching 150,000 last year, mostly from conflicts in North Africa and the Middle East.
And I would assume, Rasa, those deaths from heart disease have something to do with obesity, probably.
Absolutely. That's the non-infectious disease rate.
Yeah, not good news. Thanks, Rasa. Apparently, the creepy octopus isn't the isolated and solitary creature we thought it was. Scientists have discovered a small octopus city and have dubbed it Octlantis. Marine biologists say Octlantis features dens made out of piles of sand and shells and is home to up to 15 of the creatures. The octopuses meet up, live together, communicate with each other, chase unwelcome octopuses away, and even evict each other from dens, so it seems Octlantis can be quite a rough place to live. The new octopus city lies off the coast of eastern Australia and is close to another similar site discovered in 2009 called Octopolis. There, researchers discovered the discarded shells of eaten prey scattered around the city and sometimes used to form dens. Both the sites suggest that octopuses aren't quite the loners they've always been portrayed as. But what we don't know yet is whether these small octopus cities are particularly common or exactly how they got started. Usually, octopuses only get together to mate before going their separate ways again, but more research needs to be done to understand exactly why they might want to mix together. And that'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishenka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.